And thanks again to everyone that's read. Let's hope to open the meeting. And, welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Huge welcome to any visitors and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in a room with us tonight. I hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we do have a speaker tonight, and I'm going to hand you over to Lisa, who's going to introduce them. So Lisa, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everyone. I'm an addict. My name's Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Lisa.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, so it's my great privilege and honor this evening to introduce a good friend of mine, someone who's been a great source of inspiration to me during my recovery. I met her when I was just a few months clean, and she's just such a friendly, loving, supportive, kind, beautiful soul. One thing about her is that she just loves Narcotics Anonymous, and she really lives and breathes this stuff. She works so hard, and she's so giving. She most definitely keeps what she has by giving it away. As I said, she's just a great source of inspiration to me. So with that, I will hand you over to Catherine and let her share her experience, strength and hope with us for 40 to 45 minutes or whatever you're comfortable with, Catherine. Over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Oh, thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, everyone. I'm Catherine. I'm an addict.
Welcome,
everyone. My internet is not working very well, so if it keeps cutting out, just let me know and I'll go on to my mobile data. So please, Lisa, just let me know if you can't hear me. Thanks, everyone, for doing service and everyone making the meeting possible. Thanks, Lisa, for asking me to share. And it's funny because when you did ask me, I'd been praying for a main share because I'd not done one for a while. And just one second, my daughter's here. What, darling? Right, go on. Listen, we just had this conversation. Good girl. I was just about to say as well, I'm forewarning everybody that inevitably, whenever I'm doing the share, my daughter just, it's like she's a homing pigeon. She's just in because she knows I'm doing something. But she's gone off now. And yeah, that's, yeah, it's great that I've got my daughter here, you know, and we're in our own home, and my life feels pretty peaceful today. And being able to sit on a meeting is beautiful. And being able to share, and I hope that somebody gets something from what I share, and if not, from, you know, you'll get something from the rest of the meeting, and if not, please just keep coming back, because that's how it works, and that's all I've really done right in my recovery, just kept coming back. But yeah, just laughing to myself then, because Lisa was saying all those lovely things about me, and when you first asked me, Lisa, to share, I thought, oh, brilliant, because I felt really spiritual at that point, and I was thinking, oh yeah, really looking forward to doing this share. And then today, as the time's approaching, I'm thinking it's a weekend, I've had a busy week, I've moved house, and like my head just tries to have me over, like you've got nothing to share, just, you know, just go and have a bath instead, just chill out. And and then when I messaged before, is there a topic, Lisa? No, just your experience, strength and hope for 40 to 45 minutes. I thought, oh my God. But yeah, I feel better already for just being here and listening to those cards being read, and just knowing that I'm putting that action in for my recovery, you know. This stuff, when I first came around, there's a girl on this meeting actually who 12 stepped me, and you know, I say regularly that she saved my life, and she says, no, I just showed you the way and you've put the work in. And you know, it amazes me what I've got out of this fellowship, you know, out of my recovery, how it's given me a life that I never thought I could live, you know. And I've made shitloads of mistakes in my recovery, and I've done things that, you know, were really questionable, and I've had times where I've put other stuff before my recovery, and you know, it's thank God it's Narcotics Anonymous and not Perfects Anonymous, because I'm far from perfect. But by just keep coming back and listening to what other people have done in their recovery, you know, it just inspired me, and it lets me know that using isn't the answer for me, you know. And when I first started sharing, you know, I would share a lot about my using, and I suppose it's impossible to talk about recovery without what brought us here, and but I really like to focus on the good stuff that this place has given me, because I'm guessing if we're all in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, we've all, you know, we've all had our own journeys that have led us here to a place where we've had to find something different that we'd thought we'd found in drugs, you know. And so I did use for a long time. I was thinking before I went to the supermarket, and the bit of a weird situation's gone on. So my whole family used drugs. Everybody I knew growing up used drugs, and I thought that people that didn't use drugs, let alone people that didn't, you know, drink alcohol socially as well, I thought they were weirdos. I thought they were missing out, that I'd found like some key to some magical, amazing life, and anybody that wasn't living like I was, you know, they were missing out. And just thought to myself before, you know, I'm clean, I'm going in the supermarket and just getting a little bite to eat for tea, and, you know, feeling content with my life. And moved into a new home, been a week now, and it's a just bizarre series of events have happened that have led me to being reunited with my biological brother that I found out I had when my dad died. My dad was an addict, and he committed suicide when I was 11. He never found recovery. And he had this other son that, yeah, I've been reunited with him, but it is really tinged with pain because he's in active addiction and he's homeless, and he's sat begging outside of the supermarket that he's the closest to my house, you know. And I've spoke to him, we've had some hugs, and I've told him I love him, I've given him some numbers if he wants to get some support. But you know, it really just when I leave him, my heart breaks a bit, because I don't know if it's going to be the last time that I see him, and I'm at peace with that, because I know that that's the nature of our disease, you know. And but for the grace of God, there go I, because we were living together, you know, we were bang at it using the same drugs that he's using now. And I found recovery, and I have a new life, you know, a new chance at life. And so that has been really painful. And I've been in a really funny place, really, because I've spent the past 5 months living at my mum's, and back at my mum's with my children after a relationship breakdown. And I've been so focused on moving out of there and getting our own home. And now it's happened, I've kind of allowed myself to stop and feel the feelings and let them catch up on me. And I just feel really, I feel really emotional, I feel raw and vulnerable, and I feel quite childlike. And I was thinking, you know, I've got a few years clean, and I've done the 12 steps, and as it promised, I had a spiritual awakening as a result of them steps, and I tried to carry the message to, you know, other addicts, and everything that it said that I can have, it's given me. But I've been feeling, out of touch with myself, and it scared me, because that's a point that I've never actually been at in my recovery. I've always been really into my self-care, putting my recovery, you know, really high up on my priorities, if not first most of the time. And I've just been caught up in finances, getting the stuff for the house, you know, and it really has diverted me from, you know, like it says about diverting me from my primary purpose, which is looking after myself, keeping clean and helping other people along the way if I can. And I was thinking as well, I wonder why I'm feeling so many emotions now and feeling quite raw and feeling a lot of stuff. And I think it's because I'm truly on my own now. In, you know, for the first time in my recovery, I got into a relationship at 6 months clean, and I spent a really good few years with that guy. And I don't regret it, because I know that everybody comes into your life for a reason. But I am now, I feel like I'm getting into the real work now. You know, there's not that distraction of spending all my time and my life with another person. It's me now. And I'm getting to know, you know, I'm getting to know who I am a bit more. And it scares me. It does scare me. And I start feeling like I need to work everything out in a, you know, in like the next 5 minutes, like, where's my life going to go? What am I going to do? You know, how am I going to bring my children up? And then when I get on these meetings and I hear, you know, readings about just for today, it's like something snaps me back into the actual reality that I only need to do things for today. And that's what that is the key for me. Because I live in my head a lot of the time, in worry of the future, caught up in stuff of the past. And, you know, the step work has been a massive, you know, revelation after revelation. When I first came around and I started the steps, I thought, right, I'm going to do one step a month, so I'll finish all my steps in 12 months, and then that'll be me cured, and I'll never need to go to these meetings again. And, you know, I didn't really want to get to know anyone in Narcotics Anonymous, certainly didn't, you know, when people said, like, this stuff needs to come before everything, I used to think, God, they're dramatic, aren't they? And, you know, people would talk about this is our disease, it, you know, the disease of addiction, and just using drugs was a manifestation of it. I used to think, I'm not sure about that. But, you know, on my particular journey, I've done a lot of looking at the way it does manifest. Hello, darling. Sorry, just excuse me. Right, come on, up you go now. I'll be there in 5 minutes. Right, go on, please. Sorry, she's doing the. She's got this new high cabin bed, and it's all very exciting in a new bedroom. So I've lost my train of thought. The 12 steps, I thought it was going to do a step a month, and that it was going to be kind of like a tick box exercise. And at some points I have done that, where I thought, I'm going to, you know, when I get to the end of this step, that's when I'll be okay. Just bear with me. Go and get a snack and go upstairs, quick. That kind of destination fixation, and it feels so alluring for me. Like, this, I don't know whether this is just naturally the way that I am, or whether it is how my disease plays up in my life, but I get this destination fixation of, oh, if I just do this, then I'll be okay. When I get here, I'll be okay. When I've done this step, I'll be okay. And it feels really alluring, like that, like it is, like that's the way that I'm going to fix myself. And I forget, and I kind of go on these rampages, and I've just coming out the other side of one now that's lasted a few months, where I go so fast, like push, 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 and then I need to just slow down and regroup. And I suppose that's where I'm at the moment. I feel like you know, need to retreat a bit and practice self-care, look after myself. So, and I'm just grateful for, you know, when you hear people in these meetings, like, I've heard people over the years talking about stuff that they've been through and how they've dealt with, you know, maybe losing a bit of love for NA, or feeling disheartened or overwhelmed with the job and things like that. And And my head will always tell me, oh, you'll never suffer with that, Catherine, because you're dead special and different to everyone. But, you know, I have experienced a lot of what I've heard people talking about, and thank God they've shared their story, you know, and I've heard it, because it's given me these coping mechanisms that I never had, you know. They don't come naturally to me, things like sharing about how you're feeling and asking people for help, you know, even simple principles that for me feel so hard to practice have massive effects on my life. So things like patience, you know, I'm naturally impatient, but I'm practicing them, and it is amazing when I look back, because the principles that are linked with each step, when I completed the step, I'd write down what principles they are on a piece of paper, fold them up and put them into a spiritual principles jar. And I did that every time I finished a step. So then I ended up with the principles in a jar, and I've added things in over the years that I feel I need reminders of, because I pick one of these out every day. So I've added things in there like play with your kids. You know, because I forget, I get so caught up in real life, you know, in the pressures of life, that I forget the simple things. And I've put stuff in there like self-care, phone a newcomer, phone your sponsor, phone an old timer, you know, stuff to jar me into thinking about these things that I've worked on through the step work. And you know, the majority of the stuff I pull out at the moment, rather than it feeling like, oh God, that's something I'm still not doing, you know, pretty much everything in that jar, I can pull it out and think, do you know what, Catherine, you really are trying to practice these things in all areas of your life. You know, when I miss the mark loads, because I'm human. And I suppose the beautiful thing about this fellowship is that I've never felt judged. I've really never felt judged. When I've made some questionable decisions over the past few years, you know, no one's ever said, oh, you've messed up and I don't want you in my life, or I don't want your friendship, or I don't want you as my sponsor or as my sponsee. You know, everyone's just loved me and said, you know, we love you, and just keep coming back and, you know, keep talking about how you're feeling. And I don't get that anywhere else in my life at all, except for in this fellowship. And I think that's why I loved, you know, I loved the connection that I had with other addicts when I was using. And I suppose that kept me. Well, yes, darling. Right, choose something different then. Just put them on the side. Of all the bags of crisps in the snack jar, she's chosen a bag of pickled onion crisps. She's like, I don't like these. So my mind has gone there. Yeah, I don't get it anywhere else in my life. And I was thinking about this, you know, when okay, pick some and go quick. When I was using, and I was associating with other people that were using, what I loved about it is that when we were off our heads, we could talk about the bad stuff that had happened to us, or, you know, about our fears, or the way that we felt inadequate. You know, I'd have these real deep conversations with my using friends, and then, you know, when we weren't using, it was like the brick wall would go up and everyone would be like acting that they had all the shit together. And, you know, I didn't, I was dying inside. But you know, I had, albeit it wasn't a true connection, and, you know, I was a poorly person, and it took putting drugs in my system to be able to speak or to be able to have confidence and stuff. It still felt better than when I was on my own, and when I was on my own, I couldn't stand how I felt. And when I came to NA, I was questioning, really, at the beginning, I was questioning whether I was an addict. So, like, I knew I'd used drugs for a long time, and I knew I'd tried changing drugs, and that they weren't, you know, no matter what I used, I always ended up at the same place, which was in immense pain and dissatisfied with my life. So I'd try something different, like maybe getting a different boyfriend or a different drug or move to a different area or, you know, those kind of things that I think will fix me. And when I did come to NA and people were talking about, like, being an addict, and I was listening and they were talking about the stuff that was going on in my head, you know, and I'd go to meetings and there's a guy on here, actually, Jim it is, and I heard, Jim, your voice was one of the first people I ever heard on an online meeting. I was about 5 weeks clean and I was struggling getting to face-to-face meetings. I was riddled with anxiety and I had this newborn baby, and I was just crumbling, you know, and I had to do something different from my recovery, and I found online meetings, and my God, my recovery, it took off, you know. It felt like I had found something that was so special and precious, you know. I didn't sleep when I first got clean, and I used to sit on meetings. Right, get something else and go up then, good girl. She chose Flaming Hot Monster Munch now and doesn't like those. Sorry for the interruptions, but, you know, this is reality, isn't it? And this is what I got clean for in the beginning. Everybody had said, you know, you can't do it for your kids. You've got to truly do it for yourself. And I never grasped that concept, because I had tried for years and years to get clean for my kids. And I couldn't, and I'd gone from my first ever meeting, I went another decade using without finally surrendering. And yeah, I when I did first start doing the meetings in 2019, April the 22nd, 2019, and I started doing them, and I started doing the online ones. And I was kind of thinking, I'll get in, I'll get a few months clean, dip my toe in, and then I'll get back out, because I didn't want to get to know anybody. Certainly didn't want to be involved in, you know, fellowship, and really didn't want to do the step work, didn't want to get honest, didn't want to do all this stuff that was suggested, but I did it because I was desperate, you know, that gift of desperation. And like I say, I was curious. Right. Yep, take them up. I was curious as to what I could get. You know, I am still very selfish, and, you know, if there wasn't something in this for me, I wouldn't keep coming back. But along the way, I've learned these principles as well, of, like, sharing and caring and genuine love for people. Like, I've got people in my life now that I genuinely feel compassion for them. I feel happiness when they're going through joy, rather than feeling jealous. Like, that was my default, you know. If someone had something that I wanted, I'd be jealous rather than, you know, admiring or inspired like it makes me now. But so when I heard people talking about how they felt, how they thought, the action they put in to combat, like, addict thinking, you know, it started all slotting into place for me. And I just started, it was like loads of light bulbs were going off, like, oh my God, yeah, that is why I am the way I am. And people would say words like, you know, being codependent and stuff, and I think, no, I'm dead independent. And as I've gone through the step work and through the past few years of my recovery, more has been revealed, and I feel like I'm at a point now in my recovery where I'm probably the most spiritually lacking that I've been throughout all of it. And it is because I've got caught up in the destination of getting this house and getting my kids settled. You know, I have stopped doing those. I've still been attending meetings, doing step work, sponsoring people, you know, but it's not at that head-heart connection. I've still been doing everything because I know that if I don't, you know, inevitably I'd end up back out there or drifting away from the fellowship, and I don't want that. So I've kept coming back, and someone said to me once, you know, just take your body and your head will follow. And that's what I've been doing. And I sat in a meeting. I went on Thursday night, actually, face to face, and it was freezing cold. And I was thinking, oh, maybe you shouldn't go, just stay at home in this lovely new house. But I went outside of it, and I looked up at this church building. Sky was pitch black, but there was a warm light shining out through the stained glass from inside where the Narcotics Anonymous meeting was, you know. And I'm not religious, like this program, spiritual, not advocating any particular religion, but I just looked at that warm light coming out and how inviting it was. And I got that same sense of elation walking through that door and seeing a room full of people that I got in the beginning, you know, that gift of fellowship. It got reignited in me. And, you know, I've had stages of my recovery where I've floated on air and loved all of my meetings and my service. And then I've had other times where it's like dragging myself through treacle. And I know that my evidence shows me now that as long as I don't pick up drugs or do anything, you know, to severely harm myself or other people during the hard times, they always get better for me. They always do, you know. And hear stuff in meetings like, you know, don't leave before the miracle happens. And I thought that just related to in the beginning, you know, when I was praying, begging for the desire to use to be lifted, I never thought it would go, but it did, you know. And that was like my first miracle. And I've had loads of God incidences that have just taken, you know, they've just taken my breath away and just really reinforced in me that you know, recovery is possible and that absolute miracles happen in these rooms. And also a shitload of life on life's terms as well. I've seen people go through stuff in this fellowship that, God forbid, if I ever go through it, I hope that I can draw on the strength that they showed. I've seen people go through, you know, severe illnesses and stuff like that, and not pick up drugs and keep coming back and keep sharing and giving a message to people that recovery is possible in Narcotics Anonymous, and that we don't, you know, it's not just about putting the drugs down, because for me, that's just been the tip of the iceberg. What I've actually got from this fellowship is so much more, you know, genuine friendships, people that I love and that love me and that I can be honest with. You know, I laugh to myself sometimes because I think, you know, I could never, you know, even in my family growing up, we never spoke about how we felt and how, you know, if we were in upset or in emotional pain, we just put on a, you know, a hard face and suppressed our, you know, I suppressed my feelings for a long time. And you know, I can phone people now and just say things like, oh, I'm feeling a bit low for no particular reason, you know, and they don't go, oh, God, sort yourself out, you know, put, you know, chin up, that kind of stuff, you know, they say, oh, you know, I've had a similar thing like that happen and it does pass, and that gives me hope. So, yeah, I just, I feel like I really need to share about this. I'm friends with somebody that is experiencing, for me, it is the most unimaginable pain that a parent can feel. And she's going through it now, and she's going through it with so much grace and faith. And it's just blown me away, you know. And And I thought the other day that no matter what goes on in my recovery, in my life, I never need to use again, you know, for me to pick up is for me to cause myself pain and people around me. And, you know, no matter how appealing it may feel in a split moment, over the past few years, I've managed to stay clean since my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And I know that's not the same for everybody. You know, and a relapse is part of a lot of people's journey. And I pray to God that it's not part of mine, because I see people coming back after a relapse and I think, God, I'd feel like I wouldn't have the strength to do that, you know, but people do. And I think that's a really important message as well, that no matter what, we just keep coming back. If we're struggling, we keep coming back. Yeah, I love this fellowship. Absolutely love it. I finished work yesterday. So this is another miracle of my recovery as well. I've got a job. I was completely unemployable, you know. I was bonkers in me using, and completely unreliable. I'd had some jobs over the years and they'd always failed, you know, they'd always ended in like, I never just handed my notice in and said, oh, I don't want to work anymore. They always ended in like absolute chaos and disgrace. And I'd not worked since I was about 21 and I'd be 38. Yes, darling. Right. Just get something else. Go on then. Okay, that's fine. Okay, darling. This is terrible parenting, isn't it? Yeah, just get more crisps. She is fine though. she's happy and she's nourished. So I'd had my last job at about 21, and so what, 18 years or something like that. And I've got a job now and I work in recovery, and it's absolutely amazing because I feel like I'm working in an environment that I love recovery, and I love working for a company that understands the nature of mental health and addiction, you know. And if I'm struggling, I don't need to put on this act, because for me, that's really dangerous. As soon as I start acting like everything is okay and that I am, you know, just like a completely normal person, I start slipping in the stuff. And I need to keep myself well. I've got dual diagnosis, and you know, it is a balancing act, keeping on top of my recovery and my mental health, and the two really go hand in hand. But I feel like I've found an employer that accommodates that. You know, I've got women around me that are working in amazing careers, you know, absolutely shining a light of hope for me. You know, if I decide to embark on further education or, you know, aspirations in my career, and and that is all from this fellowship, because in my natural life that I've lived up until I came into NA, you know, I didn't see anybody recovering. I didn't see anybody that could change the way they were living. You know, it kind of felt like I was on a doomed path, you know. And I was quite content walking down that, because at least I knew what to expect, you know. So yeah, it's given me hope. Okay, go on then, darling. Good girl. It's given me hope. Lisa, I have absolutely no idea how long I've been sharing for. Could you give me a time check? And I suppose I'll just start to share what I do on a daily basis. Because I heard somebody share this once and it really helped me in my recovery. And so basically, I'll share what I do for my recovery on a daily basis, what I've done today. So I get up in the morning, and as soon as I can, between getting up, kids, all that kind of stuff, I try to read the Just for Today, because it just reminds me that this is just for today. That's all I need to do. And I feel like I get little messages, you know, off the reading. I'll try to read the page related to the Just for Today in the basic text. Connect with somebody in recovery, you know, even if that's just, you know, a quick voice note or sending a message, something like that. But there's, you know, there's nothing like actually speaking to somebody as well. So I tend to do that, and then prayer. And that is something that in the beginning it was so clunky. Like, I'd do a prayer, I'd be like, oh, I don't know who I'm praying to, or this is a bit weird, but who can you keep me clean today? You know, it's that kind of stuff. Whereas now it's evolved to, you know, more of like a gratitude and, you know, thanks for waking me up, and thank you that I'm clean, and, you know, please look after anyone struggling, and, you know, anything that I'm particularly struggling with, you know, if my defects are going crazy, you know, I do beg humbly for them to be removed, because I wreck my own life when I'm running on self-will and defects. So I'll do that. Try to practice my principles, you know, as I say, don't do it all the time in all of my affairs, because I'm human, but I try my best. And it says in the Living Clean something like, we learn as much from missing the mark as we do from hitting our target. And you know, I had this real perfectionist attitude in the beginning of my recovery, where I had to do everything rigidly and perfectly. And I've realized now that actually them times when I do mess up, you know, the times when I shout at my kids, you know, that's still programmed, because as soon as I can after it, you know, I'm making amends and apologizing for my part, and you know, letting my kids see that actually it's perfectly okay to make mistakes in life, to admit when you're wrong, and to say you're sorry to people, and ask for their forgiveness, and just do your best to not do it again. And I've noticed, it's funny, it's passed down to my son. He's 14. I've had a bit of chaos with him. He's been using cannabis, and he said he's only done it once, and it, very coincidentally, it was the time when I caught him. But that's another story for another day. But I watch him now, how he conducts himself in his life. You know, the first 10 years of his life, I brought him up in, I was in active addiction, and I ruled him on fear. You know, it was fear, violence, chaos, don't talk about your feelings, stop crying, do as you're told, you know, all that, everything I never thought I'd be as a mother. And when I got clean, I kind of expected him to recover like overnight, and it hasn't happened. You know, he still really struggled to speak about how he's feeling, but I've been watching how he conducts himself, you know, especially in hard times. And my program, Narcotics Anonymous, has parented my child, you know. The good parts of him and the good behaviours he's developed don't come from me and my natural being. It's what I've learned in NA, and it's dripped down to him. So, yeah, I'm really, really, really grateful for that. I think I'm coming to the end of time, actually, and I've got no idea how long I've shared for, but just wanted to say thanks, Lisa, again, for asking me to share. I don't know if there's anyone new around on here. But if you are new into the fellowship, please keep coming back. You know, it might sound all like gobbledygook, but, you know, more is revealed and it does start to make sense. Okay, I'll do it now, darling. So that's my cue, because my daughter's back here. Thanks so much, everyone. I will keep coming back, and here's to another 24 for all of us, hopefully. Thank you.